Chapter 4.
The notes sailed across my desk and glided onto the floor. I kept an eye on Mrs. Rotondo while I bent over and picked it up. Luckily, she didn't seem to notice. Danger. My parents want to know why your parents called our house looking for you. I can't cover for you anymore. Please forgive me. Love until eternity. Your endearing friend, Barbara. I looked up and caught Barbara's eyes. She wrung her hands and made a face that begged forgiveness. I smiled and nodded. I mimicked smoking a cigarette. Barbara nodded and smiled. She made me feel warm inside. Barbara, the girl I'd sat next to in homeroom for 2 years. Barbara, the girl who told me if I were a guy, she'd be in love with me. We met in the girls' bathroom. Two of the juniors who were smoking had already opened the windows. Where have you been lately? Barbara demanded to know. Working like crazy. I've got to get out of my parents' house or I'm going to die. They act like they hate my guts. I took a deep drag on my cigarette. I think they wish I was never born. Barbara looked frightened. Don't say that, she told me, then glanced around us as if someone might hear. She took a drag of smoke in her mouth and let it trickle out as she inhaled it up her nose. Isn't it wild? It's called a French curl. Kevin showed me. Oh, shit, someone hissed. All right, girls, line up. It was Miss Antoinette, the scourge of girls who longed for nicotine. She ordered us to line up so that she could smell our breath. Since she hadn't actually seen me, I took a chance and slipped out the door. The halls were deserted. Within minutes, a maddening bell would ring and the halls would be jammed with kids using their notebooks in front of them like shields in a battle. I guess the summer had changed me. Otherwise, I never would have snapped the iron bands of habit and left the building during school hours. I wanted to run around the track as fast as I could to sweat out the sticky sensation of imprisonment, but the boys were in football practice in the middle of the field and a group of girls were trying out for cheerleading, so I climbed up into the bleachers and walked to the far end. A red-tailed hawk glided above the trees, an unusual sight in the city. There was no place to go. There was nothing to do. Whatever was going to happen in my life, I wanted it to hurry up. I wished I could play quarterback on the football team. I could imagine the weight of the equipment and the uniform tight across my chest. I put my hands across my large breast. I noted that 5 of the 8 girls trying out as cheerleaders were blonde. I didn't know that there were 5 blondes in the whole school. Almost half the school was white, Jewish, and middle class. The other half was Negro and working class. My family was Jewish and working class. I fell into a lonely social abyss. The few friends I had in the school were from families who worked to make ends meet. I watched the cheerleaders leave the field. They looked over their shoulders to see if the boys noticed. Football practice ended. Some of the white boys stayed on the field. One of them, Bobby, nodded towards me with his head. I got up to leave. Where you going, Jess? He mocked me, then turned to head towards me. Several boys followed him. I started to hurry across the bleachers. Where you going, Jesse? They followed me as I rushed to get away. He indicated for one of the boys to climb the bleachers in front of me. He and the other boys came directly at me. I leapt over the bleachers and ran into the field. Bobby tackled me and I hit the dirt hard. It all mushroomed so quickly, I couldn't make it stop. What's the matter, Jess? Don't you like us? Bobby was pushing his hand under my dress between my legs. I punched and kicked, but he and the other boys pinned me down. I saw you watching us. Come on, you want it now, don't you, Jesse? I bit the hand nearest my mouth. Ouch, shit, fuck, the boy yelled and backhanded me across my face. I could taste my own blood. The expressions on their faces scared me. These were not kids anymore. I punched Bobby's chest as hard as I could. I must have hit his equipment because I skinned my knuckles and Bobby just laughed. He pressed his forearm against my throat. One of the boys stepped on my ankle with his cleats. I struggled and cursed them. They all laughed as though this were a game. Bobby unlaced his uniform pants and jammed his penis into my vagina. The pain traveled up my belly, scaring the hell out of me. It felt like something ripped deep inside me. I counted the attackers. There were six. The one I was angriest at was Bill Turley. Everyone knew he tried out for the team because the kids teased him about being a sissy. He scuffed the grass with his cleats and waited for his turn. Part of the nightmare was that it all seemed so matter of fact. I couldn't make it stop. I couldn't escape it. And so I pretended it wasn't happening. I looked at the sky, at how pale and placid it was. I imagined it was the ocean and the clouds were white-capped waves. Another boy was huffing and puffing on top of me. I recognized him, Jeffrey Darling, an arrogant bully. Jeffrey grabbed my hair and yanked it back so hard I gasped. He wanted me to pay attention to the rape. He fucked me harder. You dirty kike bitch, you fucking bull dagger. All of my crimes were listed. I was guilty as charged. Is this how men and women have sex? I knew this wasn't making love. This was more like making hate. But this was mechanical. This motion, what all the jokes and dirty magazines and whispers were about, this was it? I giggled, not because of what was happening was funny, but because of all the fuss about sex suddenly seeming so ridiculous. Jeffrey pulled his cock out of me and slapped me on the face back and forth. It's not funny, he shouted. It's not funny, you crazy bitch. I heard the sound of a whistle. Shit, it's a coach. Frank Humphrey warned the other guys. Jeffrey jumped up and pulled up his pants. All the boys scattered towards the gym. I was alone in the field. The coach stood a distance away from me, staring. I wobbled as I tried to stand. There were grass stains on my skirt and blood and slimy stuff running down my legs. Get out of here, you little whore, Coach Moriarty ordered. I had to walk the long distance home since my bus pass wasn't valid this late. I didn't feel like this was my life I was living anymore. It felt more like a movie. A 57 Chevy of boys slowed down. See you tomorrow, lesbo, I heard Bobby yell as they passed. Was I their property now? If I wasn't strong enough to stop them once, could I ever hope to defend myself again? I ran into the bathroom as soon as I got home and threw up in the toilet. Between my legs felt like chop meat, and the shooting pains frightened me. I took a long, long bubble bath. I asked my sister to tell my parents I was sick and went to bed. When I woke up, it was time to go to school. But I couldn't. I wasn't ready. Now, my mother ordered me to get out of bed. My whole body hurt. I tried not to think about the pain between my legs. My parents didn't seem to notice my split lip or the way I was limping a little on my ankle. I moved slow as molasses. I couldn't think clearly. Hurry up, my mother scolded. You're going to be late for school. I purposefully missed my bus so that I could walk to school. At least if I was late, I wouldn't have to face the kids before the bell rang. I forgot everything as I walked. The wind whispered in the trees. Dogs barked and birds chirped. I walked slowly, as though I wasn't on my way to any place in particular. Then the school building loomed over me like a medieval castle, and all of the memories flooded back in a sickening rush. Did the kids already know? The way they whispered behind their hands as I passed in the hallway after first period class made me think that they did. I thought maybe I was being paranoid until one of the girls called out, "Jess, Bobby, and Jeffrey are looking for you." They all laughed. I felt like what had happened was my fault. I ducked into history class just as the bell rang. Miss Duncan spoke the dreaded words, "All right, class, tear off a half a sheet of paper and number from 1 to 10. This is a test. Question number 1, what year was the Magna Carta signed?" I tried to remember if she'd ever taught us what the hell the Magna Carta even was. 10 facts floating in a vacuum. I chewed my pencil and stared at the blank piece of paper in front of me. I raised my hand and asked for a bathroom pass. "You can go as soon as you finish the test, Miss Goldberg." "Please, Mrs. Duncan, it's an emergency." "Yeah," said Kevin Manley. "She has to go find Bobby." I heard the guffaws behind me as I left the classroom in a panic. I ran through the halls looking for someone to help me. I had to talk to someone. I ran upstairs to the cafeteria looking for my friend Carla from gym class. When the bell rang, I saw Carla in a crush of kids going in and out of the double doors. "Carla," I yelled, "I have to talk to you." "What's up?" "I've got to talk to you." We made our way to the lunch line. What are they serving today? Carla asked. Can you see? Drek on rice or shit on a shingle. Yum, same as yesterday and the day before. It was such a relief to laugh with her. We got our trays and winced as the school dietitian dumped a glob of something on each of our plates. We picked up our cartons of milk and paid for our lunches. Can we talk? I asked her. Sure, she said. How about lunch? After lunch? Why not now? Carla looked at me blankly. Can I sit with you? I pressed. She continued to stare. Girl, have you gone out of your cotton picking mind? I looked confused. There's a seating arrangement here, or haven't you noticed? The moment she said it, I realized it was true. I looked around the lunchroom like I'd never really seen it before. The cafeteria was absolutely right down the middle, segregated. Get the picture, honey? Where you been? Can I sit with you anyway? Carla tilted her head back and narrowed her eyes at me. It's a free country, she said, as she turned on her heel and walked away. Hello, white girl. You new in town? Darnell teased as he moved over to let me sit down next to Carla. I laughed. There was no other sound in the huge room. You could have heard a pin drop. My stomach tightened. The food on my plate looked more disgusting than usual. Carla, I sat down next to her. I really need to talk to you really bad. Uh-oh, someone whispered at our table. Mrs. Benson was racing towards our table. Young lady, what are you doing? I took a deep breath. I'm eating lunch, Mrs. Benson. Everyone at the table tried to stifle giggles. But when milk sprayed out of Darnell's nose, well, it just couldn't be controlled. Come with me, young lady, Mrs. Benson told me. Why? I wanted to know. I didn't do anything. She stormed away. That was easy, Darnell said. Too easy, Carla answered. Carla, I really need to talk to you, I told her. Uh-oh, Daryl said. Here comes Jim Crow. Actually, his name was Moriarty. The coach was headed right for me. I was waiting for him to say something to me, but he didn't. He grabbed me by the arms, digging his fingers into my flesh. Moriarty dragged me to the door of the cafeteria. You little slut, he whispered. I'll take care of this, coach, Mrs. Moore, the assistant principal intervened. She put her arm around me and led me out of the hall. Child, she said, you are in a whole lot of trouble. What the hell were you doing? Nothing, Miss Moore. I didn't do anything. I was just trying to talk to Carla. She smiled at me. Sometimes you don't have to do anything wrong to be in hot water. All of my panic and fear welled up in my eyes. I wanted so badly to open up to Mrs. Moore. Honey, it's not all that bad, she reassured me. I couldn't speak. Are you okay, Jess? Are you in trouble? She looked at my swollen lip. No one else had noticed. Do you want to talk, Jess? I did want to talk, but my mouth wouldn't move. Here's the other troublemaker, Moriarty said. He had Carla in his grip. Mrs. Moore pulled Carla close to her. I'll take care of this, coach. You go back to being lunch monitor. He looked at her with open hatred. I could see what a racist he was. Come on, girls, Mrs. Moore put her arms around each of us. I'll explain to the principal that you didn't mean any harm. Carla and I leaned forward and looked at each other. I'm sorry, I told her. I didn't mean to get you in trouble. Mrs. Moore stopped walking. You girls didn't do anything wrong. You came up against an unspoken rule that needs changing. I just want you both to survive it. When the principal, Mr. Donato, finally called me into his office, Miss Moore asked if she could come in too. He knitted his thick eyebrows together. I'd prefer if you didn't, Suzanne. Mr. Donato shut the door and motioned for me to sit down. I felt alone in a hostile world. He slumped in his chairs and pressed his fingertips together. I looked at the painting of George Washington on the wall and wondered whether he was wearing a white sheepskin coat or if the painting was never finished. Mr. Donato cleared his throat. I knew he was ready. I've been told you made some trouble in the lunchroom today, young lady. Would you care to explain yourself? I shrugged my shoulders. I didn't do anything. Donato leaned back in his chair. The world is a very complicated place, more complex than you kids realize. Oh, God, I thought, here comes the lecture. In some schools, there are fights between the colored children and the white students. Did you know that? I shook my head. I'm proud that we have good relations between the races at this school. That's not easy to find since the school district changed. We want to keep things calm. Do you understand? I don't know why I can't eat lunch with my friends. We're not fighting. Donato's jaw clenched. The cafeteria is the way it is because the students are most comfortable with the arrangement. Well, I'm not. I wondered who was controlling my mouth. Donato slammed his palm on the desk. Miss Moore opened the door. Can I be of help, sir? Get out and shut the door, he shouted at her. He turned back at me with a deep breath. I want you to understand that what we want is good relations between the students. Then why can't I eat lunch with my friends? Donato came over to me and leaned so close that I could feel his breath on my face. Young lady, you listen to me and you listen good. I'm trying to hold this school together and I'll be damned if I'm going to let a little troublemaker like you undo all my hard work. Do you understand me? I blinked as little bits of spit hit my face. You are suspended for 1 week. Suspended? For what? I wanted to quit anyway, I told him. He smirked. You can't quit until you're 16. I can't quit, but you can suspend me? That's right, young lady. Miss Moore, Donato yelled. This student has been suspended. See that she leaves the building immediately. Miss Moore was standing outside the door. She smiled at me and put her hand on my shoulder. You okay? She asked. Sure, I said. This will blow over, she assured me. I made a pleasing face. Let me just see Miss Noble and Miss Candy, please. Then I'll go. Miss Moore nodded. I wanted to talk to her so badly, but I felt as though I was standing on a boat that was drifting away from everybody. I said goodbye and walked away. Miss Noble was marking test papers. She looked up as I came into the classroom. I heard, she said, and continued to correct papers. I sat on top of the desk in front of hers. I came to say goodbye. Miss Noble looked up and took off her glasses. You're quitting school over this? I shrugged. They suspended me, but I'm not coming back. They suspended you over the lunchroom incident? Miss Noble rubbed her eyes and slipped her glasses back on. Do you think I did something wrong? She sat back in her chair. When you do something out of conviction, my dear, it should be because you believe it's the right thing to do. If you look for approval from everyone, you'll never be able to act. I felt criticized. I'm not asking everybody, I was just asking you. I sulked. Mrs. Noble shook her head. Just think about coming back. You must go to college. I shrugged. I'm never going to finish high school. I'm going into the factories. You need skills, even to be a laborer. I shrugged. I can't afford college, that's one thing. My parents aren't going to spend a dime on me or co-sign on a loan either. She ran her hands through her hair. I noticed for the first time how gray it was. What do you want to do with your life? She asked me. I thought about it. I want a good job, a union job. I'd really like to get into the steel plant, or Chevy. I guess it wasn't fair of me to want you to want more. Like what, I said, angry that I was now a disappointment to her, too. I could see you becoming a great American poet, or a fiery labor leader, or a discoverer of the cure for cancer. She took off her glasses and wiped them with a Kleenex. I wanted you to help change the world. I laughed. She had no idea how powerless I really was. I can't change anything, I told her. I toyed with telling her what had happened on the football field, but I just couldn't find the words to begin. Do you know what it takes to change the world, Jess? I shook my head. You have to figure out what you really believe in and then find other people who feel the same way. The only thing that you have to do alone is to decide what's important to you. I nodded and slid off the desk. I'd better be going, Mrs. Noble, before they send a posse to eject me from the school grounds. She stood up and took my face in her hands. She kissed me on the forehead. For some reason, it made me think about how I felt in jail with Al and Mona, about moments when you're being torn away from people you love and you feel real close to them. Come back and visit, Mrs. Noble said. Sure, I lied. I headed towards the gym to say goodbye to Mrs. Candy. Miss Johnson stopped me in the hallway. Where is your hall pass, young lady? Oh, I don't need one anymore. I'm suspended. I sounded cheerful. Only hours before, I had felt imprisoned in these halls. Now I was leaving. The school felt smaller. I wandered the corridors like an alumna. I could hear the off-key strains of John Philip Sousa coming from the auditorium. I had forgotten there was an assembly last period. I guess I didn't need to go. As the bell rang, the doors flew open, and students flowed into the corridor. I waited for the crowd to thin out before I tried to struggle upstream to the gym. There was no one in the girls' gym when I got there. I took my sneakers and shorts out of my locker and put them on. I started playing on the monkey ropes, climbing up one and then across the others. When I shimmied down, I felt so pent up I was afraid I'd explode. I ran around the indoor track until I almost dropped. As I stopped, I saw Miss Candy looking at me. She had come back to the gym office for something and had seen me running. "How long have you been watching me?" She shrugged. "I heard you've been suspended." "Do you think I did something wrong, Miss Candy?" Even as I said it, I remembered what Mrs. Noble had explained about needing approval. "I just don't believe in rocking the boat, that's all," she said, looking away. "Wow," I sighed in disappointment. "Well, Miss Candy, I just came to say goodbye." I walked past the auto shop. That's the class I wanted. Instead, they'd been making me make popovers with lemon sauce in cooking class. How did Mrs. Noble think I could ever change the world by making popovers? Over the main entrance to the school, the words Optima Futura were carved in stone. The best is yet to be. I hope that was true. "Hey," Darnell yelled from the second floor detention room. "Way to go." I waved to him. "Meet us later," he yelled. The teacher pulled him inside and shut the window. "Jess," I heard Carla calling my name. "Jess, wait up." "They suspended me," I told her. "Me too, for 2 weeks."
2 weeks? They only suspended me for one. I'm quitting, though."
Carla whistled through her teeth. "Shit, are you sure about that?" I nodded. "I just can't take it anymore." "Jess," Carla said, "with all the shit that went down, I forgot to ask you what's up. You said you needed to talk." That moment was a turning point in my life. I felt like a dam ready to burst, but I heard myself say, it wasn't that important. Carla looked concerned. "Are you sure?" I nodded, feeling the last brick of the wall go up inside me that might never come down again. "We're going down to Jefferson," Carla said. "Want to come?" I shook my head and hugged her goodbye. I didn't want to face my parents. I knew they wouldn't be home from work yet if I hurried. As soon as I got home, I took 2 pillowcases and stuffed all my pants and shirts in them. I reached deep into my closet and pulled out the backpack that contained the tie and jacket Al and Jacqueline had bought me. The ring! I took out my mother's jewelry case and slipped it on my left hand. I hurried, afraid my parents would come home and catch me. I found a piece of pencil and a paper. I was sweating and my hand shook. "Dear Mom and Dad," I wrote. "What you doing?" Rachel asked me. "Shh," I continued to write. "I got kicked out of school. It's not my fault, in case you care. I'm almost 16. I was going to quit anyways. I have a job and money. I'm leaving. Please don't come after me. I don't want to live here anymore." I didn't know what else to write. They could find me at my job if they wanted to, but there was a chance that they'd be happy to be rid of me, as I was relieved to be gone. "What you doing?" Rachel asked me again. Her lip trembled. "Shh, don't cry," I told her. I gave her a hug. "I'm running away from home." She shook her head. "You can't," she said. I nodded my head. "I gotta try. I'm going crazy here. I'll tell," Rachel threatened. I rushed out the door, afraid to be caught by my parents at the last moment. They could use force to bring me back, have me arrested, or commit me to an institution, or they could let me go. It was up to them. I'd learned that. I ran down the street until my lungs ached. When I was blocks away, I leaned up against a lamppost and caught my breath. I felt free. Free to explore what freedom meant. I looked at my watch. It was time to go to work. I was almost 16 years old. I had $37 in my pocket. "You're late," the foreman told me as I punched in. "Sorry," I said, and started the machine up right away. "Damn, kid," he told Gloria. She kept her head down until he walked away. Then she looked up and smiled. "Tough day, Jess?" I laughed. "I got kicked out of school and ran away from home." She whistled and shook her head. "I take you home with me, but my husband is always trying to give away the kids that we've already got." I asked Eddie if I could work a double. I'll let you know later, he said. At 11 p.m., the work ran out and he sent me home. I tried to sleep sitting up in a bus station, but the cops kept coming by and asking me to show them my ticket. I bought a ticket for Niagara Falls, but they woke me every time the bus left for the falls and wanted to know why I wasn't on it. I walked around and ate breakfast and drank coffee and walked around some more. At noon, I went to a movie matinee. When I woke up, I was late for work. Eddie warned me not to be late again. You look like hell, Gloria whispered. Thanks a lot. I started thinking, hey, Gloria, remember when you told me about that bar your brother went to in the falls? Gloria tensed. Yeah, so? So does he know of any bars like that here in town? She shrugged. It's important, Gloria. Honest to God, I really need to know. Gloria looked nervous. She cleaned her inky hands on her apron as though she wanted to wipe her hands of the whole topic. At lunchtime, she pressed a piece of paper in my hand. What's this? The slip of paper had the word Abbas written on it. I called my brother. I asked him where he goes. He said he used to go there. I smiled from ear to ear. Do you know where it is? What do I have to do? Drive you there? Okay. I put my hands up in surrender, just asking. I called information and got the address. After my shift, I washed up in the bathroom and changed into clean clothes. I looked at the ring on my finger. It fit snugly. I pledged to never take it off. Maybe now it was time for the ring to reveal to me the secrets of surviving my own life. I raced down to Abbas and then stood outside, pacing and smoking. I was just as scared to go into this bar as I'd been to enter Tifka's. Only this time I was carrying everything I owned in two pillowcases. Where would I go if I got rejected here? I took a deep breath and walked into Abba's. It was really crowded inside, which made me feel anonymous and safe. I squeezed in at the bar. A Jenny, I called out to the bartender. She narrowed her eyes. Let's see some IDs. They never asked me at Tifka's, I protested. She shrugged. So go get a beer at Tifka's, she said as she walked away. I hit the bar with my fist. Having a hard day, kid? One of the butches at the bar asked me. A hard day? My laughter sounded shrill. I got kicked out of school, got no place to live, and I'm going to lose my goddamn job if I can't find a place to sleep so that I can be on time. She pursed her lips, nodded, and took a swig of beer. You can stay at our place for a while if you want, she said casually. Are you fucking with me? I demanded. She shook her head. You need a place to stay? My girlfriend and I have an apartment over our garage. You can stay there if you want. It's up to you. She signaled to the bartender. Meg, get the kid here a beer. On me, okay? We introduced ourselves. Jess what? She asked. Jess, that's my name. Just Jess. Tony snorted. Jess. Jess, huh? Meg slammed a bottle of beer in front of me. Thanks for the beer, Tony. I saluted her with a bottle. Can I move in tonight? Tony laughed. Yeah, I guess so, if I'm not too drunk to get the key in the door. Hey, Betty. Tony's girlfriend came out of the bathroom and stood beside her. Hey, Betty, meet Dondi. This kid's an orphan. Parents died in a flaming car wreck, you know? Tony laughed and took a swig of beer. Betty pulled away from Tony. That's not funny. I intervened. Tony said, you got a place I could stay. I really need a place to sleep. I mean, real bad. Betty looked at Tony, shrugged, and walked away. It's okay with her, Tony said. I'm going back to sit with Betty. I'll find you before we leave. I finished my beer and put my head down on a bar. The room was spinning and I wanted to sleep so badly. Meg wrapped her knuckles on the bar near my head. You drunk or something? No, I'm just working around the clock, I told her. I didn't think she liked me. Then she brought me another beer. I didn't order one. It's on the house, she said. Go figure. As the crowd started thinning out, I found an empty chair near the noisy back room, and I leaned my head against the wall and fell asleep. When I awoke, Betty was tugging on my sleeve, telling me it was time to go home. Tony sang, "Roll me over in the clover," as Betty tried to get her into the car. I lay down on the back seat and immediately fell asleep again. "Come on, wake up," Betty urged me. We were in their driveway. Betty struggled to prop Tony up against the car. Don't give me two problems to deal with, Betty told me curtly. I got out of the car and helped to get Tony upstairs. You can sleep on the couch tonight, Betty said. Who's the kid? Tony demanded to know. What's this, your new butch?
You invited the kid to live in the garage apartment, remember? Betty snapped. I curled up on the couch and tried to disappear. After a while, Betty came out and threw a blanket over me. If I could just get some sleep tonight, I'll be out of here, I told her. It's okay, she said wearily. Don't worry, it'll be all right. I clung to that little bit of assurance. Lying there in the dark, I started realizing I was on my own. No more school, no more parents, unless they came after me. I gagged on shame as I recalled what happened to me on the football field. I was afraid I was going to throw up, and I hadn't asked where their bathroom was. I wished this was Alan Jackie's couch. I wanted to wake up in their home. Then I could tell Jacqueline what happened to me on the football field. Would I have told her? I realized I might not have told Jackie or Al what the boys did to me. I felt too ashamed. I made a vow to myself before I fell asleep. I promised myself I would never wear a dress again, and I'd never let anyone rape me ever again, no matter what. As it turned out, I could only keep one of those promises.